It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Las Vegas is famous for icons that symbolize the entertainment capital of the world. There's the Rat Pack, the Showgirl, and the most famous icon of all, Elvis. And there's one performer in Las Vegas who has dedicated much of his performing career to keeping Elvis's spirit alive. Steve Connelly performed Spirit of the King, the ultimate Elvis show, at Notoriety Live Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays at 7 p.m. For ticket information, go to notarylive.com. And for everything about Steve, go to spiritoftheking.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, there's one hold on. Here for the show. Here my belief with you. I didn't do anything but lay off of my belief. Look out, one more. Knock me down, hammer my feet. Sign of my name all over the place. Do anything that you want to do. Honey, let me see you, don't you? Never my belief. Look out.
Great intro.
I didn't do anything but lay off of my belief. Look out.
Steve Connelly, ladies and gentlemen, I heard your voice more than the guitar, but we're doing Zoom, so it works out pretty well either way. So I got to ask you the question. It's important.
To the speaker. Where's the speaker, man? Look at that guitar.
For people who are listening, he's showing us his wonderful Elvis guitar. How does a guy with a business restoring art, we're going to give your art website in a second too, but how does a guy with a business restoring art and painting church ceilings become one of the most enduring performers in Las Vegas and the most sought after and accomplished Elvis stylist in the country? You've been doing this for a long time, and I've marveled at the fact that there's a bunch of Elvis stylists or performers or impersonators or impressionists that have come and gone over the decades I've been here. How is it that you maintain that level of quality throughout all these years?
It's crazy. It's been 29 years. I've been doing a nightly show, right? So we met probably 29 years ago.
Yeah.
And to go from the, there's quite a bit to unpack with what you said.
We got time. Go ahead.
I went to college. I got a scholarship into art school, and I was in a band though when I was 14, 15, 16. You know, I played bass guitar in high school because if you played bass, nobody played bass. Everybody played guitar, so there was always room to get into a band. So. And I still have a stand-up bass. I took bass guitar lessons. I took voice lessons all before I ended up in college. Well, I took more voice lessons after I started doing Elvis. But so I'm the guy who went to art school. So I went to art school. I studied art, music, and theater. But also in art school, my minor was techniques, which was learning everything there is about just anything to do with painting, sculpture, and I'm a sculptor. So, and when I was doing, in college, I got a job working for a guy, Cave Corporation, out of New York, and I'm in Massachusetts, and he was expanding to Massachusetts, and it's a church restoration company out of New York that's been there for 150 years. And anyway, I somehow bumped into him because I have a part-time job at a paint store, and he comes in and asks, he has a statue with him, and says, I got this chip. Can you match the color to fix it? And I said, I can fix the whole thing. I can fix the broken plaster. I can fix everything. He said, you can. Oh, because I'm going to bring it to another guy. I said, what's he charging you? So ultimately, it was a Blessed Mother statue. And I gave him a reasonable price and took it to my, at the time I had a place, I take it back. This was in the basement of my house, my second semester of college. And that led to me restoring over 700 statues in 123 churches. I carved the face of Jesus. I have I also painted God on the ceiling of a church in Connecticut, a couple of angels. So I did some intern work in both the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston and the Metropolitan Museum. I was going to be a curator. My goal was to be a curator. And So that's and also in the band. I was also in a band. I had a college professor my third year review. I did my third year reviews where they basically review everything you've done for 3 years. And you have this like 4-hour intervention. I don't know, they didn't call it that, with your professors and certain counselors, right? And it's a big deal that the school offers to supposedly keep you. And anyway, at that point, I snuck in a painting I had done in high school because I was like one painting short of the 15 or 18 paintings I was supposed to have and all whatever I had. But they liked it. The teachers liked this. This is different. This is very different than your work. It's so different. There's a certain abstraction we really like. And my ego is too big. You know, I did that when I was 15. And when I did that, they got real mad at me for sneaking in a painting I shouldn't have snuck in. And I should say this. I was elected president of the art department. So I was president of my class for the first, second. And so right there, class president, sneaking in, lying. They were very upset. But and that's crazy, too, for a kid where I came from to end up in this school. But in that moment, he said, you got to focus on art and not the music. You're doing too much with the music, because I was hanging flyers around. I was also at the time, my third year, I was doing an internship on the Clark University has a bar on the property.
Nice. And
big name bands would come in. And so I worked running the monitor mix on this for whatever bands came in. And there was a couple different sound companies. So I got credit for that too. So, but I thankfully had other professors who said, don't listen to him. You know, Michelangelo played instruments. Freddie Mercury played. John Lennon was an artist. This one professor who said, you know, Da Vinci invented the mobile piano. And so that.
Well, Tony Bennett was an artist also.
And that, you know, my mother, now that I know from my mother. My mother used to make me watch anything to do with Tony Bennett because he was an artist. So I'm real familiar with Tony Bennett's artwork since whenever, because even more so because I met different people connected to Tony. His son basically saved his career in the 80s, 70s by really marketing his artwork. So I got to see Tony Bennett's daughter sing. But I'm a massive fan of Tony Bennett, as everybody should be.
Absolutely.
Everybody should be. But from an art standpoint, Tony Curtis is also an artist. So my artwork has introduced me to a bunch of other people. If you go to Steve Connolly Art, just my name, steveconnollyart.com, it's a focus on my artwork. And yeah, also,
how did you make that segue, Steve, though, from the art of art to the art of Elvis?
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is there was one professor, Leon Hovsepian, massively important in my life, who encouraged me to do both and said, it's the same thing. These guys don't understand. It's the same. Your brain is wired to be creative, whether you're singing, whether you're playing the guitar, whether you're painting. So now it is true. My father was like, you should just stick to the painting. The music is not good. You should stick to the painting. Why are you doing the painting? You got this career in art. What are you doing the singing for? I was in heavy metal bands. My father started liking me when I was playing Charlie Parker, jazz stuff. When I would play Dizzy Gillespie and Buddy Rich, who I got to meet, Buddy Rich, got his autograph when I was had fake ID and got to see him and got to show that to my dad. I had a fake ID at 15, said I was 18. And that's how I played in bars, too. We didn't know about the Wayne Newton law in Vegas back in Boston. There was no laws. You were too young, you can't be in here.
Right.
But But my dad, if I was blasting Dizzy Gillespie, he would poke his head in my room and he'd be gone. And then I think he was yelling at me and I turned the music down. And he goes, now you listen to some good music. I could blast any jazz, old jazz, louder than Kiss, and he would be fine.
You have such an eclectic background so far. I can't think of any of my guests that have had that much of an eclectic background before you went to a particular point in your focus. So how do you go from Charlie Parker to Elvis?
Well, I got in a band as a bass player and I had to learn a Rush song. And so I was playing, you know, in a way I was, and even the Charlie Parker, that line, I was going to play different stuff. I started to switch from playing my fingers to a pick and I could play faster. I could pluck the strings faster as far as that goes. I switch. Eventually, the band, I end up getting my own band. I was in early bands. I was always playing with, I should say this, my art school band. The, was a band I was in where we were about the same age. But in art school, I also joined a band with guys who are like 6 years older than me, mainly because I felt like I would learn more from them. I would learn more from older guys, and that I didn't think of myself too talented at that stage, even though I was playing stuff, but I was the bass player. I just felt like I was almost like the best person in the band, and I didn't want to be. And I shouldn't say, I just felt technically I needed to learn more. So I ended up, and plus the band was playing more. When art school band, we were just playing in a cellar. This band had jobs. So anyway, then I did that, and I had to learn Rush, and I had to learn these other songs. And then I started to play the guitar. I got a guitar. Because I also was, you know, to go into a hotel room with the stand-up bass or to go to a gig, it just became, and plus I started singing more. Once I started singing, I took voice lessons, which gave me, so like my started taking voice lessons at about 20, 19, 19. I was second year of college. So the voice lessons gave me confidence. But then I started doing open mic nights. That's really what happened. That's how the Elvis thing happened. Open mic nights. So you're doing an open mic night, and this is back when it was bands, not like today where it's open mic nights at karaoke. Back then, you had to know what the guys on stage were doing. So you walk in, and everybody knew an Elvis song. Well, do you know that? I know Little Sister. I know Blue Suede Shoes. I know. So I started, and they knew. So it was easy to do Elvis. So initially, it was just certain. I did some Little Richard, basic blues stuff, you know. So then, but the Elvis caught on. People, you should just do Elvis. You do Elvis pretty good. And I was like, what about the Robert Plant? And what about when I'm singing Led Zeppelin, you know? So that kind of happened. But initially it was the fun of playing not with the band. Because in the band, I was the punk. I was the one everybody told what to do.
Right.
You know, and I liked that. It was good for that period of my life, you know, to be yelled at. I had one drummer. Can you swear on this show?
Sure.
And he had graduated from Juilliard, and he was great, a phenomenal drummer. But he would only call me either handsome or fuckstick. So he'd go, hey, fuck. And he was, and so if I screwed up, it was fuckstick. If I was doing it right, hey, handsome, you're doing good. There was another guitar player in the band at the time who he would criticize. He was very critical, this drummer. But I think at that stage in my life, I needed someone to tell me if I was right. And he really helped me understand timing. And so anyway, why did I go to him? So then to get away from him and to get away from the band, I had fun with these open mic nights where you would sit in, and it took, like, you know how they say getting in front of an audience is a tough thing to do? I started to thrive in front of an audience and feel good about it and be able to talk to people and you know, get them, you know, that's, so I encourage any young person I'm talking to, do open mic nights. That'll get you out of yourself, out of your own skin, get your confidence up, and you're not getting paid. So who cares? You know, you're right. There's no, if you're getting paid, there's a lot more pressure,
right?
You know, I got to, you know, prove myself if I'm getting paid. It's an open mic night. Just go screw up, you know?
But here, let me bring it along here. How did you end up getting to Las Vegas and then establish yourself as this Elvis performer when at that point there were several in Las Vegas doing that? And so obviously you sustained, you thrived. How did that happen? Because we only have a half hour show and your life can go on forever. I want to make sure the important
stuff. Okay, yeah, let's get to Vegas, baby. Let's get it. I started to switch my voice. Yeah, because you can't do Elvis from Boston, you know? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, you kids, hey. So I got to learn Elvis's voice. But how did I get to Elvis? It was a similar situation. I was in a band and there was a guy who was from Vegas, Donnie. And Donnie would come see me and say, he was the biggest one, like, why you should be an Elvis? You look like Elvis. You have his sense of humor. And he said he'd seen Elvis like 6 times at the International Hotel. And he was in his 50s, right, at the time. 50s. So I'm trying to reach out to him. Can't find him. But he's the guy who sort of, he helped me move. And I happen to have this statue that I bought of Elvis, a black leather statue I got from the Franklin Mint when I was like 14. I just bought it out of a TV guide. And my mother was a huge fan of Elvis. My mother loved Elvis. So this guy sort of, he convinced me I should do Elvis. Brought tapes to my house. My band had broken up at the time, so we were broken. I was in between bands because when he first asked me, I said, "No, I'm going to be a rock star. I'm writing my own songs. I'm going to be right there with Aerosmith in Boston, and those are the that was where I was going to go. I'd seen Aerosmith 17 times, and you know when you're, if you're from Boston, Aerosmith is the massive inspiration, massive, right? They did it. They did it. They are the template, right? And so anyway, this guy talking me into doing Elvis, he produces my first show. And he said, I'm telling you, and he convinces me to put together a show. And it's a benefit for homeless veterans. So again, I'm not getting paid, but I got to assemble a band. So I go to the bands that I met at the open mics, the guys who knew Elvis, and said, hey, I'm doing this charity event. Would you guys sit in with me? And now I already talked about being not in a band at that moment. So it was sort of like a segue in my moment where I was at. So I put together this band. I rehearsed. I think we did about 6 or 7 rehearsals and learned about 25 to songs. And we did the show. And this guy, Donnie, had the place sold. It was at Notre Dame Church with the gymnasium they have. And it was packed. They had searchlights outside that you could see from 100 miles away. And my very first show, packed, sold out charity event, which was great. You know, if you're not giving, you're not, you know, I'm a giver, not a taker, right? And anyway, I think I established that then. And that was a really successful gig. And it wasn't much after that. I started doing all churches. Like, you know, I had the church business. So I was still restoring statues. And I would go to the church. You know, I'm doing Elvis now. How about if
Steve, I'm going to drag you to Las Vegas because I want.
All right, here we go. But my Elvis career starts to become successful. Successful enough that I get written up in the Boston Globe as the King of the East. I'm in the Boston Herald, the hub Elvis. So I have headlines of me. And I come, I find out about, I did a show at a show in sort of a legend show at the at a theater in Boston, Equity Theater. Why can't I think of the name of it? And every performer was from Vegas. Will Collins, he's the reason I'm here. Will Collins, the Liberace impersonator in Vegas, is in this show that was being produced. He's going to be mad at me if I can't remember who he is. I know who he is. Anyway, I auditioned for that show. And through a bunch of Elvises, I go to the Kowloon on Route 1, and I audition. And there's other Elvises there. I get the part. While I'm doing that show, and I did 22 shows around Cape Cod, and we did 6 weeks at the theater. I can't remember the name of it right now. And the Will Collins said, you're as good as any of the Elvises in Vegas. I can get you an audition with Johnny Stewart. So that's how it happened.
And Johnny Stewart, for our viewers and listeners who may not know, John Stewart was a very big producer and Legends in Concert, which ran forever at the Imperial Palace and other locations.
Yes, if it's not for Johnny Stewart, who is the godfather of tribute shows, of impersonator shows, right? And I just talked to Johnny. Johnny's produced thousands of my shows. So if it's not, I auditioned for him. And the second time I auditioned, he said, you could be the best Elvis in Vegas, but you're in Massachusetts. So I got other guys knocking on the door. And if you don't, you know, I'm going to let them work before I call some guy in Massachusetts to have you fly out here. And but Johnny did help me get out here and help me with my first place. And I worked for Legends. And while I was working for Legends, someone from MGM saw me at Legends and offered me a job at the MGM, which led to May 1st. So my first time with Johnny is my first show in Vegas, February 10th, 1996. Then I get the MGM gig May 1st, 1996. So May 1st, 1996, I did over 3,400 shows for the MGM Grand. And, you know, that's back around when we would have met.
Yeah, you're right.
The whole band.
And the reason I think that you're different than any of the other Elvis, whether you call them Elvis stylists, impressionists, and impersonators, etc., I think that you humanize him. You said yourself, you have his sense of humor. You have an ability to connect with an audience. It's not just a vocal impression. It's not just a musical impression. It is a connection that you make with the audience. That's my take anyway.
And I see myself as a student of Elvis, and over the years, as well as everything I studied, because once I decided to do this, I will say this, I did my first show, sent it to an agent in Boston, and he said, he gave me a sent me a letter, sent it to six agents. Nothing came. One guy sent me a letter saying, "You don't have enough personality. You sing, you sing fine, but you know Elvis could do things with his face, and he could win over an audience." And so this guy's critical letter made me get like really possessed, and I got all these movies from Elvis, and I studied every, especially the 68 comeback special, because I was wearing leather in my suits, I mean, in my rock shows. So when the guy Donnie said he brought over the 68 comeback, I said, "Now this, oh." So that's still the centerpiece of my show, because I'm a real musician. I'm a real guitar player.
You mentioned earlier about giving back. It's not just that you're performing and earning a great living doing it, but you get involved with various nonprofits, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. You're involved with them and Steve's Visionaries of the Year. Tell us a little bit about that as well.
Well, now as far, I do get involved with different charities. I just performed at an event today that was for senior living community. And but the from a leukemia standpoint, if I get you guys to look at the QR code or pictures, you can get my story. But I have three brothers who died from leukemia. Mm-hmm. So my mother's firstborn child died. My brother Colin, we were Irish twins. He died. We were 8 years old. And then I had a younger brother who's almost three. He died just before he turned three, and I was 13. So those moments. Both traumatizing. Our house burned down at one point, and so we were living in a motel around the time Colin died. And my parents got divorced. My parents got back together. My parents got divorced. So a lot of trauma. But one of the things I learned was I just, you know, this idea that life is not given to any of us. So I made a decision. I want to make my mark somewhere. So there's that. But as far as, so my personal thing with, I mean, it's traumatizing. And I've been to psychiatrists and I've been through so much stuff, losing my brothers and dealing with that. And I just don't want to see other people deal with it. And I've been for quite a few years here, especially here in Vegas, participating in different leukemia events. And my new one is a challenge to raise money between for just a 3-month period. So if you go to, you can see it on my website, Steve Conley Art. So you'll hear my story, but the key, it's funny, at my show last night, I have the banner with the QR code, and I let the audience know this is something that's near and dear to me, and could you, you know, donate, you know? And a woman after the show, in fact, the performance I did just before I came here, I told them I have the leukemia event going, and a woman came up and has a picture of her grandson who has leukemia for 3 years. At the show last night, I could probably find the picture, a woman at the show who has a grandson with leukemia. So it touches people. You know, honestly, I don't want to get choked up.
It clearly means something to you. That's why I wanted you to talk a little bit about it. I didn't want to make the whole show about it, but definitely needs to be mentioned, especially when your personal connection with that was important. So that was good. Well, when you go out on stage now and you perform as Elvis, are you, you're in the moment, but are you thinking of Elvis at the time, or you're so much into the performance that consciously you can't think of anything other than performing as you do?
Well, that's a great question. That's a great question, because that is essentially how, kind of before every performance, I align myself, you know, and I've been saying this prayer since I was doing a show in Boston, and I booked the show through Patrick Lyons, who was like the Donald Trump of Boston. And I met him anyway. When I get to the theater, the guy in the theater is a big club next to Fenway Park. He says, "What are you doing here? We don't have no Elvises here. This is, you can't come in. These kids are going to eat you alive. They're going to destroy you. You're not playing." I said, "I got a contract. Says I'm getting $1,200. I'm playing." And I got my bodyguard Wayne with me, and I'm wearing the black leather suit, and the guy is upset. So I said, "Look, I'm going on. So whatever we need to do, however you need to do it, I'm going on. I'm going to do the show." But I was, you know, very nervous. The guy's yelling with a thick Boston accent, you know, "You're going to bomb. This is a mess. You don't belong in this club. It's a goth club." That's what he said. "These are goth kids. You know, they're going to kill you." So I get on my knees and I pray. I say, "God, please give me the voice to sing, ears to hear. I ask you, Lord God, that the gifts that you've given me, that I honor you with my performance tonight. But if there's any way, God, any way you could get Elvis to come and join me, somehow let me be a conduit to Elvis and let him be part of this show. And that, if you could, and I asked for the spirit of the king, if the spirit of the king could just come into my body. And I said that prayer, and I killed. We killed. The goth kids loved me. The show, and it was packed house. You know, there was probably 500, 400 people there. And I did my set, and it just was great. And it was great to see the guy was like, I don't know. You did great. I don't know. You did great. I don't know what it is. So that's the key thing is, and I say that prayer before every show. And that's where my trademark Spirit of the King came from.
I always wondered about that. Yeah, I didn't know that how you got that trademark, but now I know where that tagline. It really makes sense now. Of course, before I let you go, we have about a minute or so left. What do you see yourself doing in 5-10 years? Do you think you're still going to be doing Spirit of Elvis? Because your art obviously is a very big part of your life and your career as well.
I ask myself that every 10 years. Every 10 years, I think I can do this for 10. I had a manager, Jay, who's passed away, who said to me, you know, I said, I was gaining weight. He said, you can't gain weight. Elvis can get fat. You can't get fat.
You cannot, right.
I said, no, all the other guys are fat. And I had the show at the Aladdin at the time. He said, no. And he put me on a diet, Body for Life. And I've been on that diet ever since. I weigh the same now as I did in college. And Jay said, you can do this for 15. Look at Chuck Norris. He brought all these Chuck Norris videos to me and Chuck Norris. And he knows I'm a purple belt in Taekwondo. So, you know, I'm a massive martial arts guy. So now it seems like every year I keep asking myself, am I still going to do it? Now, Pete Wilcox, who was one of the greatest Elvis tribute artists.
Remember him, yes.
We're dear friends. We're very good friends. Pete's gone gray, and he's doing the gray Elvis. And I said, I was thinking I would do the gray Elvis, but I'm not going to step on your toes. Right. He's in Florida now. But there's that, you know, do you just keep going? Because here's my act. I get on stage and say, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't expect anybody to be here tonight. If anyone would remember me, it's been 48 years since I've performed live. And as you guys know, I hope you know this, that I've been cryogenically frozen alongside Walt Disney and Ted Williams. Ted Williams coming back soon. We got a bionic body. I'm telling you, we got this new thing called AI, artificial intelligence. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's me. This will be my first show. Please tape. I want people to know I'm alive. It feels good to be alive. And I just want, for those of you not sure what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Elvis Presley. And so my act has always been, since the very, very beginning, since that show in Boston, I tell people I'm Elvis. And there have been places I've been where they 100% convinced I'm Elvis back when I first started. I mean, I was in Maine and Bangor, Maine, Fort Kent, and they were like, you're real, but my act, and then at the end, I always say, I'm really not Elvis. I was joking, I'm kidding, I'm Steve Connolly. But my act has always been, I'm cryogenically frozen, which a lot of people believe. You know, they say that Elvis, when he was in his coffin, he was a frozen wax figure and that it was melting. You've heard these stories.
Yeah.
So I initially got it from a lot of folklore that was happening in the beginning. So it was very common for people to believe, when I started doing this, that Elvis was still alive. There was tons of books about
it. Clearly, his spirit is alive in you, and that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Steve Connolly. He's performing Spirit of the King, the ultimate Elvis show, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays at 7 p.m. at Notoriety Live. For ticket information, go to notarylive.com. For everything about Steve, go to spiritoftheking.com and follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube, and Steve Connolly Art as well. And Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Ira, you're a blessing. And I want to talk to you more off camera. There's certain things you're doing that I'm very interested in.
You got it.
And you've been doing this a long time. And the fact that you're still doing this. I did Christmas shows with you. I did live band stuff with you. And you are a fixture in the city. Like me and you, we are both. Somebody once told me, Steve, you're a fixture. That's pretty good. I guess being, and you are a fixture.
I appreciate it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,